FM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your place for this area's news, talk, and sports. We are locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Steel.
I'm Wendy Gillette in New York. The White House says the Treasury Department is working with bank regulators as they step in to help two banks that collapsed.
I'm Stephen Portnoy in Washington, where the president assures Americans their banking system is safe.
Every American should feel confident that their deposits will be there if and when they need them.
That after the extraordinary weekend action to protect depositors at two failed banks, Silicon Valley Bank of California and Signature Bank of New York. President Biden authorized a rare move, allowing the FDIC to preserve all the accounts at the two banks, and not just those under the traditional $250,000 insurance limit.
CBS's Jill Schlesinger further explains President Biden's actions.
He said the depositors are going to be saved. The banks, their shareholders, and management, they will not be saved. That is very different than 2008. This is not a bailout. This is a rescue for depositors only.
The administration has also approved a big oil project. CBS's Ed O'Keefe has more.
It's called the Willow Project. It's being run by ConocoPhillips along the northern slope of Alaska, what is the largest natural reserve of U.S. land anywhere in the 50 states. In essence, the White House and the Interior Department saying that these leases date back to the late 1990s, and ConocoPhillips would have had a good case in court to argue that they've had these leases. They're opting now to develop them, and the federal government can't stand in the way of an agreement that was made several years ago.
Former President Trump's ex-lawyer, Michael Cohen, spoke ahead of his testimony before a grand jury in Manhattan about alleged hush money payments.
This is not revenge, right? What this is about accountability. I don't want to see anyone, including Donald Trump, indicted, prosecuted, convicted, incarcerated, simply because I fundamentally disagree with them. This is all about accountability. He needs to be held accountable for his dirty deeds.
A global study of toilet paper finds all the products tested contain toxic so-called forever chemicals. CBS's Vicky Barker reports.
A study of 21 major toilet paper brands in the U.S. and elsewhere found all contain PFAS, a class of toxic chemicals linked to cancer, fetal complications, and other serious health issues. The study looked only at how PFAS enters the food supply via wastewater contamination, not at any potential effects on individual consumers.
California is bracing for more wet weather.
This atmospheric river is supposed to hit tonight and go through Tuesday. So what they're doing now is they're using this time to complete any remaining rescues and, of course, to get resources into the right places.
Carter Evans in Northern California. The markets ended mixed. The Dow ended up down 90 points. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
Hi, this is Drew Barrymore. Do you know what my idea of the perfect night is? First, make a bunch of complicated plans, and then cancel all those plans. Instead, spend the night streaming movies and TV shows on Pluto TV for free, including my show. There are tons of live channels and even more on demand. Free to stream all you want on Pluto TV and never pay a thing. Stream now, pay never. Pluto TV.
I am James, senior apparel designer, and this is Behind the Design with Hawks. Hawks is your classic workwear brand. It's designed for those guys that are on the job site. Just driven performance, just rugged and comfortable. Thinking of durability, everything is either double, triple stitched, bar tacked. It's built durable. It's going to perform. It's going to move with you. It's going to have everything that you need in a product. Hawks, only at Boot Barn.
Lights, camera, action. It is time for your close-up with WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's. Listen to WFHR every Friday morning at 8:30. We'll play a quote from a famous movie, name the actor, character, or movie, and you'll win two value baskets and two concrete mixers from the superstars at Culver's in Wisconsin Rapids. Join us Fridays to be WFHR's Star of the Day featuring Culver's.
Weather brought to you by you and your great business. For just $100 a week, this sponsorship is designed to make your phones ring.
But the offer absolutely ends March 15th. Log on civicmedia.us/weather. civicmedia.us/weather.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Following is a list of upcoming meetings in the listening area for Tuesday, March 14th. The Central Wisconsin Joint Airport Board meeting will take place at 8 a.m. at the East Terminal upper level in Conference Room B. In Portage County, the Highway Committee will meet at 3:30 p.m. at the Portage County Annex in Conference Rooms 1 and 2. The Stevens Point Downtown Business Improvement District Board meeting will begin at 4:15 p.m. in the City Conference Room on Strong's Avenue. The Village of Whiting will hold their board meeting at 7 p.m. In Adams County, the Special Administrative and Finance meeting will take place from 3 to 4 p.m. at the Adams County Courthouse in Room A231. The Solid Waste Committee meeting will be from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Courthouse in Boardroom A230. The Village of Buren has their Board of Trustees meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. at the Municipal Center. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Mainly clear skies overnight with a low of 1 above. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. High temperatures reach up to 35 tomorrow. Ample sunshine expected. Lows level off around 19 tomorrow night. Warmer Wednesday and Thursday with highs from the low 40s to the mid 40s. Chance for scattered rain showers Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
I laugh so much in this job. It just makes me happy.
Don't boo. Vote.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am Jane Matnair. She is Kristen Bry, who just dropped out of our StreamYard feed. So I am here with Eileen Newcomer. Eileen, you are with the League of Women Voters. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, from what we understand, it has been challenging for the League of Women Voters in the last few years with getting all of the candidates to come and speak at your forums. Can you tell us what's going on with that?
Sure. Yeah, we have a long history of trying to help inform voters, empower them by providing them opportunities to learn about the candidates. And so it's a longstanding thing that we've been doing. And unfortunately, in more recent years, fewer and fewer candidates are choosing to participate in our candidate forums. But honestly, we're not alone in this. I know that we're talking about the league's perspective, but I've also heard from other organizations that fewer candidates are participating in their activities as well. But when that happens, it's a loss for voters. So our focus is always on voters and trying to empower them so that they can find information so they can be informed and responsible citizens when they go and vote. And it's just unfortunate when certain candidates choose not to participate.
I'm curious, Eileen, as to, do they give you any reason as to why they won't participate? Or is it just, thanks for asking, but no thanks?
You know, the polite answer, thanks for asking, but no thanks. I guess if somebody's not going to participate, that might be the best case scenario is that they say, thank you, but no thank you. Sometimes we get ghosted by candidates and they don't respond to our inquiries asking them to participate. Sometimes they do say, you know, we don't think that you speak to our base of voters, and so we want to focus on other activities. It really depends on the candidate and what their individual reasons are for not participating. We hear the full scope of things, of why.
Kristen, are you there?
I am here. Sorry about that. The internet decided to be a little bit glitchy. And so, Eileen, nice to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
And so, Jane, what was your first question?
Just what kind of, when they invite politicians to come and speak, what reasons do they give for not coming? And I find it interesting, Eileen, that they say that these aren't necessarily our voters, but everyone who votes is a voter. I don't understand why they feel like they aren't addressing people who might vote for them.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. And I feel similarly. And so sometimes it is hard for us to kind of understand why people are choosing not to participate. And I think that some candidates maybe have a preconceived notion of who a league member is and how they would vote maybe in a certain way, even though we're a nonpartisan organization, we're staunchly nonpartisan. All of our members are doing this work because they believe in the power of nonpartisan voter education and voter advocacy work. So it is like a little bit mind-boggling. But I think something that candidates and maybe other voters don't realize is that we reach way beyond just our core membership as well. And so in my mind, they're doing the candidates who choose not to participate are doing themselves a disservice, in addition to a disservice to the voters, because they're missing out on an opportunity to reach, to get their message in front of a ton of voters that are looking to the league for unbiased information. And, you know, we do try. We are really careful about when we reach out to candidates to make sure that we're not treating one more favorably than another. So if we send an email to one candidate, we send an email to all the candidates. Or if they do phone calls to one candidate, we do phone calls to all the candidates to make sure that everyone gets the same number of touches and number of times for us encouraging them to participate. Because we certainly don't want it to seem like we're recruiting one candidate to an event or an activity harder than another candidate.
And so I guess that's a good question as far as how many voters are you reaching as far as like across the state and in the different communities? Because obviously I see you guys online, but like what are all the different channels of communication that you're reaching people?
Yeah, we try to be multifaceted because we know that people get information and consume information very differently from one person to the next. So, you know, we do our outreach on social media. We do programs like this and, you know, try to get on radio shows. We also do radio ads. We're in newspapers. We're in the community at like farmers markets or at the library or in high schools or on college campuses. We really do try to reach out to a wide swath of people. And we do have 20 local leagues around the state who do community-specific engagement work in their communities as well. And they know where most people are going in their communities. And so we do have a pretty broad geographical reach as well. Just some numbers that I have on the top of my head is, so I work very closely with our voter guide on vote411.org. And that's another resource that we have to provide voters with information about the candidates. And we send questionnaires to the candidates and ask them to fill them out and then publish verbatim whatever the candidate wants to say on a specific question. Or, you know, if for some reason they don't want to answer the question that we ask, if they want to say, I don't like the league and this is why, like, I'm not going to touch that information. Yeah. I'll publish whatever they want to say. That's their space to say what they want to say. But anyway, so that's an information source that we have for the candidate or for voters to learn about the candidates. And every year we reach tens of thousands of voters. So we were just under 100,000 voters in the midterms, looking at our Wisconsin specific voter guide.
Wow. And so, and then I guess going back to the original, that there is the problem you're running into is the fact that there's more and more Republican candidates who don't want to be part of the forum. They're not responding to the questionnaires that about where their stances are. And that information always goes to vote 411, right?
Right.
Yeah. And so what is the new tactics or what are the new solutions to that problem that the league is trying to implement?
Yeah, you know, so we are trying to be creative in the ways that we get information about the candidates. One of the ways that we're doing that is finding new partnerships and supplementing the information that we have from candidates on Vote 411, whether that is, like, I'll individually do the research on all the candidates and find their websites, and if they have social media links on their websites, we publish that right alongside their biographical information. And we've got a really great partnership with Wisconsin Eye to also link their candidate interviews to our page on Vote 411 as well. So they have they also have some issues with some candidates participating and others not. But it's interesting because sometimes we get candidates that respond to us that don't respond to them and vice versa.
Oh, interesting.
And so by being able to collaborate, we're able to have kind of more comprehensive candidate information on both platforms. And then for as far as like community events, one of the things that I know a lot of our local leagues have been pivoting to from candidate forums is to do like one-on-one recorded interviews with the candidates. You know, partially because, you know, having everyone show up at one location on a certain time of day can be more challenging. And so we're trying to look at, you know, our structure and framework to make sure we're being as flexible as possible. So we give candidates multiple opportunities to participate as well. And so having these one-on-one recorded interviews can be, you know, conducted over a span of several days rather than just one time in one location. But I've also heard some really exciting events as well, like kind of like candidating events where all the candidates in a local area are invited to come and participate. And then members of the public are invited to come and have kind of more one-on-one conversations with the candidates rather than having kind of the prepared marks or having to respond to questions in front of everyone, having more, like I said, one-on-one conversations with the candidates.
That sounds super interesting. And so we're talking to Eileen Newcomer, who is the voter education manager at the League of Women Voters Wisconsin. And I guess, and this is more maybe of a philosophical question, as far as, because at least when I first read this in the Journal Sentinel article about the new approach that you all are taking, you know, the pushback from Republicans is that they're trying to pigeonhole you as like a left-leaning organization. And so that there's two... There's the voter information arm of League of Women Voters, and then there's certain issues that the league takes a stance on as far as where they fall, right?
Right.
And so I guess like in this day and age where everything is so partisan and like it's so many things are black and white, red or blue. And so like how do you exist as a non, how much pressure is there to not take a stance if you're going to be nonpartisan? Or like, how does that definition of nonpartisan, despite what it actually means, which is you don't choose a party, but you can choose a side, like take a side on an issue, like how does that work right now and the conversations that you have internally?
Sure. Okay. So I'm going to try to answer what I think you're asking.
Okay.
Is how do we stay nonpartisan when we have positions on certain issues and they tend to align maybe with one party or another at a certain period of time. And so like, how do we navigate that? Because that can be really challenging. And, you know, people's perception is kind of like what they've seen and what they know versus like the 100-year history of the league. Right. And so they don't actually know what it was like 40 years ago, 50 years ago, and that sort of thing. So for me, I kind of like to ground it in, you know, what is our like guiding principle or our North Star? And for me, it's always voters and empowering voters to make their voices heard. Like, I'm not here to tell people how to vote or who to vote for or that sort of thing. And so that's really kind of like how we separate our voter services specific work and engaging voters. It's like we want them to have the tools and resources to make an informed decision. And then on the advocacy side of it, all of our positions come from study and consensus from our members. And we don't switch a position on a certain issue just because a certain party has switched their position on that issue. We are consistent and we go forward. And one of the ones that I think...
I'm going to stop you right there, Eileen, sure. And let you finish the question when we come back from the next break, because we have to go break.
Right.
But we'll finish that question and then also talk about more information you need to know as the audience coming up 3 weeks from now. We got the spring election. So our guest is Eileen Newcomb.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
We may be thousands of miles apart, but we can still connect. And when we do, we make things better. At Child Fund, we connect children all around the world with what they need to grow up healthy, educated, and safe. Together, we co-create connections that help millions of children who live in poverty worldwide, and their families, and their communities, and you. Join us. Together, we can make the world a better place. Two small worlds at a time. Visit childfund.org to learn more.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio. The AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Eileen Newcomer, who is the Voter Education Manager for League of Women Voters Wisconsin. And we were talking the first segment she was here about the adjustments the league is making, because there's more and more Republican candidates who do not want to partake in their forums or answer their questionnaires. And that led to the question as far as a nonpartisan organization, you are allowed to have stances on issues. And yet, having those stances then pegs you as partisan, but that is not the case. And so I had to cut you off because we're going to break. So I want to make sure to let you finish your thought.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you so much. And I totally understand you have to cut people off and have the break. That makes sense. But I just was going to mention as an example, the issue of gerrymandering. And I know that's one that seems very partisan here in Wisconsin. But when you look at it, the full scope of how it affects voters in other states, like looking at Illinois or some other states out east, it's not necessarily the Republicans that are gerrymandering the states for partisan gain. And so this is like an issue that we have come to through consensus and having our position and really focusing on wanting to have every voter have a voice and have voters pick politicians rather than the other way around. And even in Wisconsin, this is an issue that has changed as the legislature has changed as well, because when obviously now the legislature is Republican controlled, but it has been democratically controlled in the past, and we were advocating for fair maps at that time as well, and those legislators did not pass fair maps. So it's yep. You know, it's something that changes as the who's in power changes, but the league does not change how we advocate and what our stance is.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a good point. There is back in 2009, they had all three chambers and they could have put fair maps in, and we would have been in a very different place than we are right now as a state. All right. Well, we have a very important election coming up. I guess every election is important in Wisconsin, but this one coming up, I think everyone is talking about a lot, because obviously the Wisconsin Supreme Court race, but that it's not the only race on anyone's ballot. And so as far as with 3 weeks and a day to go, what are some of the most important information that you and the league is trying to get out there so that people can have all the information they need to get out and vote?
Sure. Yeah, I think some of the most important information is you know, what's on your ballot. So like what you just talked about, the Supreme Court race, is a lot of people are aware of it and what's happening with that. But there are a number of other judicial elections on the ballot as well, including Court of Appeals, Circuit Court. And then there's a lot of really important local races in addition to that. Like, I know Madison has a mayoral race. I believe Racine does as well. And there's a lot of like county executive races at the local level. And so definitely encourage everyone to go to My Vote and see, you know, what's on your ballot, and then go to Vote 411 to find information about the candidates. And then everyone is across the state is also going to have three questions on their ballot as well, two pertaining to a bail amendment, and then one is a non-binding advisory referendum related to welfare benefits. And so definitely encourage everyone to take a look and read up on those as well, so you're prepared to go and vote. And I think other important information is just how to vote. If you haven't registered to vote in a while or haven't checked your polling place, definitely encourage you to make sure that your registration is up to date, that you know where you're going on election day if you're planning on voting in person. Or if you want to vote absentee, either by mail or in person, My Vote also has a lot of information about your options to go either vote in person, absentee, or to get a ballot by mail. I know I vote by mail because it's just very convenient. I get to have that time with my ballot and research my candidates and make informed decisions. And my partner and I, we always vote at the same time so we can be each other's witnesses. And it's kind of a special moment for us to be engaged civically and kind of do that together. So if other people would be interested in that, definitely would encourage you. It's a way that we bond as a couple. So it's a lot of fun.
Did you do that even before 2020?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's so funny how that, I didn't even think about voting absentee until the pandemic. And now it's such a such an easy default for so many people. Even if you go, because I think the last two elections, at least the ones, the primary and the fall election, I got my absentee ballot, but then I ended up still voting in person because I just brought it with me and they voided it. And so it's like, it just gives you the option that if you get to it ahead of time, otherwise they can always void it. You won't vote twice. And so I guess, but then early voting starts March 21st?
The 21st, yep.
Perfect. And because this is more of a personal question, as someone who kind of personally tries to get information, good voter information out there. And even in Wisconsin, we're in it is so decentralized and there are so many different, like some places have early voting, some do not, some end on different days. Like I stepped in it in the fall where Madison ended their early voting a day early than Milwaukee did. And I posted something wrong. So like, what is the hardest part of being a voter education manager in Wisconsin?
You know, that is, I think you kind of listed it out, is that, one of the great strengths of our system is that there's a lot of local control and municipal clerks have a lot of leeway to determine what works well for their community. But that also makes it really challenging to have one message that works for the entire state. Mm-hmm. But I will say, working with the Wisconsin Elections Commission, they're always trying to figure out ways to get information to voters in a way that makes sense. And so one of the improvements we've seen on the My Vote website is actually a tab where you can go and find your early voting options. And that's something that in the past, like I would just go to 50 different municipalities' websites and put it all on our website. And so now it's nice to have like an official link where we can send people to and they can just find their information by searching in their address. And that, yeah, it's a challenge, but, you know, a worthy challenge.
Absolutely. All right. Well, Eileen Newcomer, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck in the next 3 weeks as far as the final push to get people out to vote. But this is super helpful information. And thank you for all the work that you do over at the League.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Get out and vote. I love seeing how much enthusiasm there is for this election. We had record turnout in the primary, and get out and vote. Thanks so much.
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive.
But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
This is the story of a very special woman. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician or an entrepreneur. Her knowledge was limitless and still is. She could also make monsters disappear, especially those that lurked in the shadows under the bed. Once, this woman put back together a teenage girl's broken heart, which had been shattered in a thousand pieces, just by giving her a bear hug. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
If you're talking, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them, with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So talk, they hear you. You can do it if you try.
Weather brought to you by you and your great business. For just $100 a week, this sponsorship is designed to drive traffic to your website.
But the offer absolutely ends March 15th. Log on civicmedia.us/weather. civicmedia.us/weather.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know. Weight restrictions on state highways will begin Monday in the North Central region. The Wisconsin DOT places seasonal weight restrictions on specific highways during the spring thaw periods to prevent damage to the pavement structure. Beginning at noon on Monday, March 13th, Wood County will see restrictions on the following roads: Wisconsin 54 and Wisconsin 173. Weight limits are 6 tons gross load for single-axle vehicles and 10 tons gross load for tandem-axle vehicles. The maximum gross weight is 24 tons. Visit the DOT website for complete information on weight-restricted roads. Wisconsin's latest winter storm has downed tree limbs and forced power company crews out to deal with outages scattered around the state. If you see downed power lines, stay away and contact your local utility. If you're supposed to be flying today, contact your airline, not the airport, to see if things are running on time. I'm Melissa Kay for Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Mainly clear skies overnight with a low of 1 above. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. High temperatures reach up to 35 tomorrow. Ample sunshine expected. Lows level off around 19 tomorrow night. Warmer Wednesday and Thursday with highs from the low 40s to the mid 40s. Chance for scattered rain showers Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
No. I think the Florida summer is the equivalent of the Wisconsin winter.
That is probably true. Maybe Arizona's worse, but certainly not fun. But that is not what you're here to talk about. You're here to talk about the fact that Basically, we avoided a meltdown with Silicon Valley Bank, something that most of us, I don't even think, knew what it was prior to last week. And so we wanted to bring you on to kind of explain what the heck happened with Silicon Valley Bank. So I guess, as you and I were talking about this over the weekend, let's just start with a refresh of how banks work.
All right. Well, so that can go on for a long time, but I'll try and keep that as tight as possible. If you think about money, originally people viewed money when they went off the barter system. Gold was the original money, or silver, and you would, you know, pay for that. But then what happened was banks came around, or guys came around and said, hey, you don't want to get your gold or silver stolen by, you know, Robin Hood or any pirates or whatever. And so then it was became a place where you could store your money. And then what happened was these guys were, you know, and they were smart. They said, oh, well, we'll just issue a note against your gold. And then over time, they basically created a system where it's fractional reserve. So they take your money and use it as a base against other assets where they create loans. So the most basic way, if you think about it, is your home. The average person buys a home from a bank, and the bank says, okay, you put some money up, and then you put the deposits in our bank, and then we will issue you whatever. Let's say it's $1 million. You put 200 up. Now $800,000 are created, which are future payments basically from you as an asset on their balance sheet. And so everybody's money sits in banks, and it's backed by mortgages on homes, commercial loans to businesses, you know, sometimes assets and securities, but, you know, financial assets. And what happened here was, is that, like in The Wonderful Life with George Bailey, and he shows, he's like, here, this is where your money is. It's her house. It's whatever. You can't all want your money at the same time because there's not enough money for you to have it. And so basically, we are in a situation where it was like an old school 1930s bank run.
And so, but it's specific because Silicon Valley Bank is not a consumer bank, right? It's not like something where you and I can go get a loan or like have a checking account there. It was specifically made for VCs, tech companies, and like Silicon Valley, right?
Yeah. So if you think about it, like, as a market participant, I have an account at Goldman Sachs, but it's not like the average person has a Goldman Sachs account. So it's kind of like that, but it's a commercial bank in the sense of it's like a VC takes in money from investors, and then he tells the guys that he gives money to as their startup investments, hey, you should use this bank for their money. And the reason why this was interesting is because this bank was basically, you know, because you used to work in tech and you had stock options and these things that were illiquid, but you knew they had value. And so as opposed to having to sell the company to get paid, they would lend against your promote in the fund or your stock options as a startup. So there's all these things they did that was very startup specific, or lend money against unprofitable companies that JP Morgan or, you know, normal banks, US Bank, would not do. And so they developed a very nice niche, and that's why their deposits grew so fast. That and the fact that VC did really well over the last decade, and more people wanted to be in VC, and then COVID money, and they just got way too many deposits. And so they had created this business-to-business thing. So the issue that arose was most average people don't keep more than $250,000 in a bank, which is what the FDIC insures. This was a case where, because it's a business-to-business bank, only like 3%, 4%, or 5% of the deposits were insured. And so there was a lot that was on the hook. And then the assets that they had to back that money had been impaired because interest rates went up. And the tech bubble crashed, essentially. So the value of their assets was less than their liabilities. And that can be okay, but not if everybody wants it at once. So essentially what happened last week was Peter Thiel and a couple other big investors pulled $40-some billion of deposits in a few days. And then the word got out. And then, you know, like lemmings, everybody's just panicking, essentially. And by Friday, it was out of business.
And that's, it is out of business. It's like, it's not getting a, the bank itself is not getting a bailout. Like, they're done.
Done.
And so now, and this is what happened over the weekend, right? Because it's like, the bank is done. Is there no accountability? Because didn't the, like, CEO of the bank basically, like, take out a bunch of shares and, like, he's going to be fine? Like, he'll be, his money is secure?
I mean, I guess we'll see how that goes, you know? Like, I'm pretty sure the FDIC will try to gain assets and maybe he'll be liable for being sued. I mean, they're pretty careful, so I'm sure that his lawyer kind of gave him the okay. But yeah, it looks bad. But to be fair, I mean, all his equity's toast, so he didn't like necessarily make off great here, right? Like, that guy doesn't have a job, doesn't have a business, and all the equity, and he probably was a very rich man with his equity that's now, you know, worth zero. So I hear what you're saying.
James is rolling her eyes at you on that statement.
Gee, Ben, I can't tell you how badly I feel for these people.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I get it. He might have to give that money back. But, like, you know, ultimately, yes, you're correct. This was a business bank for rich people, for businesses that have a lot of money, and the venture capital community threw their arms up and they were freaking out because this was very bad for their industry. And they've done really well, so I'm pretty sure they're big donors, and they probably are the ones who got something done here to bail out the deposits, which I think is a stupid move.
So it up, though, because that's what happened over the weekend. So let's take – because when you and I talked, it wasn't a for sure thing, because basically the people who worked at the bank, some got out, whatever, but there was – the problem became all of the people who were depositors at the bank, some of whom are like Peter Thiel type wealthy and some of whom are startup guys who have like 2 million in there, not 200 million or whatever. And so the question became what to do with people who had money in there beyond $250,000. And since it's businesses, I'm assuming most, like you said, most did. And so the political question over the weekend was what happens to the depositors, right?
Yeah. I mean, so essentially what they said was initially they were going to give the 250 to everyone today, and a dividend of 50% of their deposits over the course of today, tomorrow, this week, basically. I don't know exactly what day. And then they were going to go through a receivership process where they sell their assets and make good on them. Or, you know, they distribute the proceeds to all the creditors. And the depositors are the first creditors. So when you're a depositor, you have a claim on the assets of the bank. And that's one thing we should talk about just real quick, is that people should know when you have your money at the bank above $250,000, that's not your money anymore. That's just a claim on the bank. That's their money. Even though people think it's their money, ultimately banks go under. And if they don't have the assets, then you just have a claim, essentially, like you would in any business. Or if you have loaned people money and they only give you what they have left, you know, so That's something that people should understand more out of this whole event, I hope.
You know, Ben, after you just said that, now I'm thinking of a nice spot in my backyard where I can dig a hole where I can keep my money.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, if everyone did that, there's not enough money for everyone to do that, first of all. And then the prices of everything would go down and the economy would be severely hurt. I mean, it's still, that might be what's going to happen anyway. But, you know, I think that the better solution is to own treasury bonds. Oh, you remember, like I told you last August, buy treasuries. Like, that's been the kind of the consistent thing, is that you can buy treasury notes from the U.S. government and those are safe. Or you can, you know, buy assets. But the key idea here is that bank cash isn't as safe as you think it is above $250,000. Now, look, the government came in and said, hey, we're going to make everybody whole. And so for now, but like, for example, First Republic Bank was down 75% today because people were worried and people were pulling out. Some people that we know have moved significant amounts of money. I mean, there was a genuine level of fear and panic out there, and that causes the problem itself. You know what I mean? It's like fear is actually the problem with this. Because even in 08 and 98 and some of these times, things work themselves out over time, but it's the demand for instant liquidity against bad funding or assets that are somewhat impaired that create this mismatch, and then banks go under. You know, they go, and it shouldn't be surprising though, because like if you think about it, over the last 100 years, there's been so many banks that have gone out of business. There's been, I mean, this is the savings and loan crisis in the 80s when we were young. You had the long-term capital management thing in 1998. You had the 08 great financial crisis. You know, you've had a lot of these incidents, and so it's just the latest one, basically.
Now, we're talking to Ben Bry, who's spent 20 years on Wall Street as an analyst, trader, and portfolio manager, and is also my older brother, about everything, trying to break down and demystify what happened so quickly with Silicon Valley Bank. And I guess, well, one thing I want, I read this over the weekend just as a quick side note. If you're not, Jane, if you're not going to put your money in a hole in your backyard, you could be like Giannis and spread it across 50 different banks. Supposedly he hits his threshold and then he
moves on
with another one. but I guess,
you know why? Because he doesn't trust banks because he's Greek. He's seen this before.
Yeah. And I guess, is that a takeaway from this? Is not trust, like, what for the average consumer, what is the takeaway from this?
Well, that banks are not as safe as you think. Two things. Banks aren't paying you enough on your money relative to what the government's paying you. So they're ripping you off. Like, now they might give you services, so there's some value to that, and you have to decide. But like, if you were to go to the government's website, treasurydirect.gov, you know, well, rates have come down a lot in the last couple of days, but the you can still get 4% plus, and that money's secured by the U.S. government. And so you're not having to worry about that. And if you put it in a bank, you can get 1, 2, maybe 3% in a CD, but you're not getting paid much, especially in your checking account. And so they better be giving you a mortgage, or like in the case of Silicon Valley, they were lending against your stock or doing something that helps you in order for you to justify why you would be there. But like, I think that it's like treasuries are much more interesting than banks, and especially for the excess amount over the top. And, you know, buying your home, I mean, in Italy and China and other countries, they use their home as their piggy bank. So they're like, I buy my home with cash, not a mortgage. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and they use their home as their savings. Like in Italy, the average Italian owns 1.5 homes. They don't trust banks there either.
Interesting. All right. Well, we got to take a break, but our guest is Ben Bry, my older brother, but also Wall Street analyst, trader, and portfolio manager. Because when we come back, I want to, because what I am having a hard time understanding is that you said that the depositors are going to be made whole, right?
Well, that's as far, I mean, this is a fluid situation, right? So as far as I know right now, they've come out and said that all the depositors are going to be made whole, and that the banks can get $100 or $1, like they can get their assets that are impaired because of interest rates made whole by the Fed, and then give that money out. Now, again, if everybody takes it out of the system, then you have other problems. But near term, yes, it seems that you can get your money out.
Okay, so my question when we come back is, how is that not the taxpayers who are paying for that? But don't answer now. We'll answer it when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
So, have you done sports?
Yes.
What about weather?
Done that.
I've got it. The moon.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to James Help Seth Pick the Next Theme for this week's Seth Faces the Music. It's on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR. The problem is, he's done so many shows already, it's getting tough to find the next group of songs. Don't worry, though. It'll be fine.
Yeah, all right. You got me. I give up.
That's it. The theme for the next Seth Faces the Music will be...
1 in 4 Americans today are living with a disability. I'm one of them. People with disabilities are extremely talented, resilient problem solvers that have so much to offer. And we've got a trusted ally on our side, an organization we can rely on, Easter Seals. Easter Seals is leading the way to full equity, inclusion, and access to healthcare, employment, and education for people with disabilities, families, and communities. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours.
Learn more and get involved at EasterSeals.com.
Papa, why can't we telegraph while riding a horse?
Son, there ain't no one to blame but Jeffro.
He was riding old Betsy the Stallion, tip-tapping away at his telegraph, when blam! Ran right into the side of the saloon.
Well, if Jeffro can't do it, neither should you. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care, they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station. A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha, WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Kristen Bry, she is Jane Matinere, and we are on the phone with my older brother, Ben Bry, who has spent 20 years on Wall Street as an analyst, trader, and portfolio manager, and is explaining what happened with Silicon Valley Bank and how it may or may not affect us as consumers and not tech investors. And my question that I teed up before we went to break was, so it sounds like the government is stepping in, they're going to help out depositors, but it's not But it's taxpayers are not paying for this?
Well, the Federal Reserve, look, again, this is all very live. The Federal Reserve is liquefying unliquid bonds at par. And so.
All right, say that in simpler terms.
Well, so, okay. So if you own a bond that has a 2% coupon from a couple of years ago, 10 years, now that's worth maybe 70 to 80 cents. Well, independent. On Friday, it was worth like 80 cents maybe, okay? And so you can't get from the market the full dollar. Over time, assuming it doesn't default, you'll get made whole. But again, finance is about taking money from the present to the future and from the future to the present. That's the core function of finance. And so the central bank, its role is to try and arrest panics, basically, because back before it was created in 1913, there was lots of panics. And J.P. Morgan was considered the central bank. He would bail it out when things would happen like this. But if you look at it in the days of the wildcat banking, which is essentially what's going on in crypto, it's kind of a wildcat banking time there, it would come and calm people down and make them whole in the hopes that like confidence was regained. Now, confidence is a tricky thing, right? If people panic and they're taking it out, I mean, this can cascade and it could be like a contagion situation. So right now it's these middle banks, business banks, but I just was talking to a guy in Bloomberg here. There's now currently 1, 2, 8 banks halted that aren't trading, which is bad. First Republic is down 75% today. PacWest, another California bank, Key Bank's down. So this is a bad situation as mm-hmm. we speak. And it's, again, it's different than 08, because in 08 it was the value of the assets the banks had were, it was bad assets. They lent money to the wrong people and then they used leverage on it. This time it's fine assets, but now that everybody's demanding liquidity, there's a lot of disruptive. It's very disruptive.
It's a run on the bank.
It's a run on the bank, but it's a run on all the banks. So, you know, the question is do you know your banker? Or do you want to be at JP Morgan? JP Morgan and Bank of America, they announced this morning that they would have to pay a tax for all the deposits they're going to get. Because they want to socialize the losses, but they're going to have the banking system pay for it, as opposed to the taxers. So that answers your question as of now. But, you know, you never know, right? This is literally less than 24 hours old, and it's happening real time. And
yeah,
so ultimately, I think this ends with interest rates having to go down and money printing, or else a fairly ugly, you know, recession. I mean, it's probably going to be a recession anyways. We might already be in it, but you know, I don't think that they can keep interest rates where they are. So maybe you'll get to refi your mortgage at a lower rate.
And so I guess politically, are we still looking at, is that part kind of over as far as the split government and how the government's going to step in and do anything? Is that decision been made over the weekend, or is there still more decisions that need to be made?
I mean, I think they're going to watch and see how it goes. I mean, okay. I think you need to take a little data. I think they did some, but the market's clearly panicking right now. I mean, the move since, and by the way, you always ask me what I do. this is when I do well. And I was betting that this would happen and then interest rates would drop. And we had the biggest drop.
But you were betting that Silicon Valley Bank would fail?
No, I wasn't. Oh, I was betting that there was going to be some serious issues and that interest rates would have to come much lower. And the market, like the U.S. 2-year has had the biggest move in like 30 years or something. It's 150 basis points, almost 140 basis points from where it was last week. Like, I mean, you have to remember Jay Powell, the head of the Fed, was telling Congress, in front of Congress, that they're going to raise rates by maybe 50 basis points and accelerate it. I mean, he has a lot of egg on his face now. It's like, look at what's going on. This is because of you guys. It's the Fed's fault. Like, they always raise rates until something breaks, and now something's clearly breaking.
Yeah.
Ben, caller at 844-967-2789. Karina wants to know if credit unions are they in the same situation as banks?
Yeah, I mean, they're the same thing. But they're locally owned. I mean, I tend to think that the smaller banks are a community, and as long as you don't have people freak out, they should be fine. But again, all these banks and credit unions have access to sell their assets so you can get your money. The question is does everybody want their money right now because they're scared? And if that's the case, there's not enough money, basically. So the downside scenario here is that everybody wants to put their money in Jane's backyard, or their backyard maybe, and there's not enough money for it. And then the government has to backstop it. And then they're in this gigantic bailout, and the value of the dollar goes down. The value of gold goes up. Bitcoin's up 15% today, as an example. Gold is up 7%. I mean, there's like a lot of things that people are just getting money out of banks and putting them in securities that they trust. That's basically the bottom line of what's going on right now. So whether it's the Treasury, it's gold, it's Apple stock, you know, or a few other things, crypto, because it's an alternative system. That's kind of the situation at the moment.
Man. Feels a little bleak, but I'm happy you were here to try to explain it to us. And as you said, it's a developing story, so hopefully we can get you back as things progress.
Yeah,
I know that the Consumer Price Index is dropping tomorrow after a jobs report on Friday. And so there's certainly a lot of stuff about the market that we could have you come back and talk to us about. So thank you, big brother, for joining us. We'll have you back soon. Enjoy the warm weather that we currently do not have, but that's okay.
All right,
Ben Bright, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
All right. Well, that does it for the second hour. When we come back, we will have a debate on daylight savings time, which... should we switch to one? Should we switch to the other? Should we just keep doing what we're doing and just suck it up twice a year? You let us know. 844-967-2789. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
It was a normal day.
He was in some minor accident, a fender bender.
And I had this impulse to call him, but I didn't, because I thought I could call him later that week.
He abandoned the car. He came home and he shot himself without ever talking to anyone.
When I came home that night and I found her, they told me that she had shot herself, and I couldn't believe it.
I asked if he was okay.
Taking a gun into your house for protection is a terrible myth.
Once you pull that trigger, that's it. There is no coming back.
65 Americans a day die by gun suicide. Store your gun securely, locked, unloaded, and away from ammunition. Help stop suicide. Learn more at infamilyfire.org.
Brought to WFHR, you by Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.